live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruda. On today's show, Dan Hoost is here from Sullivan County Government with the latest from the legislature. Plus, a new report is raising concerns about health impacts of backup generators planned for a proposed data center campus in Northeast Pennsylvania. We'll get the latest on the zoning hearings and what it could mean for nearby residents. And what happens when world-class jazz meets a mission to fight hunger? We'll find out about a new collaboration between the Chandelier Music Festival and A Single Bite that's proving music really can be food for the soul. And it's our summer fun drive. Donate now at 845-482-4141 or online at wjffradio.org or via the mobile app. The news is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. President Trump says he will not sign a bipartisan housing bill that cleared Congress last month. The measure is set to become law without a signature when the constitutional 10-day review period expires at midnight. Trump says he's withholding his signature to protest the Senate's failure to pass legislation that would require proof of U.S. citizenship to register to vote and a photo ID to cast ballots in federal elections. The latest escalation between the United States and Iran is adding to the financial pressure on American households. Mark Zandi is the chief economist at Moody's Analytics. He says the additional costs are starting to take a toll on families.
The cost for the typical American household is about $1,100. If you look at the typical American household spending patterns, that's roughly the amount we spend on all the fruits and vegetables we buy in a given year, or all the money we spend on public transportation. So it's consequential, it's adding up.
With the ceasefire still uncertain, the economic fallout could become a major issue in the midterm elections, now just 4 months away. Airstrikes between the U.S. and Iran this week have exposed the vulnerability of U.S. bases across the Middle East. Former U.S. Central Command Chief Joseph O'Tell tells NPR that Tehran's objective is becoming clearer.
I think that's a big takeaway out of just these last 72, 96 hours, that Iran is principally focused on permanent sovereign control of the Straits of Hormuz, and they are willing to accept the risk of large-scale conflict before they're willing to relinquish it.
O'Tell says that makes the Strait of Hormuz a central flashpoint in the conflict. Stocks on Wall Street opened higher this morning as retail gasoline prices continue to climb. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow rose about 67 points in early trading.
AAA says the average price of regular gas and diesel fuel rose another 4 cents a gallon overnight. Fuel costs have been climbing this week as a result of fresh tensions in the Strait of Hormuz. Delta Airlines says its jet fuel bill for the most recent quarter was a record $4.4 billion. Delta's better off than some competing airlines since the company has its own refinery. Despite the headwind of high fuel prices, Delta reported better-than-expected profits for the quarter. The company points to strong demand for air travel, especially in the premium price seats. South Korea's giant computer chip company, SK Hynix, is offering shares on the NASDAQ for the first time today. The memory chip maker expects to raise more than $26 billion. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow was up 56 points, the NASDAQ up 13. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. A political outsider with a large social media following has won the Colorado Republican primary for governor. That's according to a call by the Associated Press. Marine Corps veteran Victor Marks has received interest from the MAGA wing of the party. Colorado Public Radio's Alejandro Alonso Galva reports.
Marks defeated two state lawmakers and was up by only 2,515 votes when the race was called. He thanked supporters in a video Thursday.
Colorado is not the way our founding fathers envisioned it 150 years ago. Life is too expensive. Housing is out of reach. And too many communities feel less safe.
Marks calls himself a high-risk humanitarian. He's claimed to have saved hostages abroad and involvement in a homicide as a child. Opponents have accused him of lying about his background. He'll face State Attorney General Phil Weiser in the general election in the Democratic-leaning state. For NPR News, I'm Alejandro Alonso Galva in Denver.
NASA is looking for volunteers to spend a year in isolation simulating a mission to the moon or Mars. The study will include simulated deep space travel, surface operations, and spacewalks. Researchers say the goal is to study how crews handle confinement, limited resources, and the demands of long-duration missions. The program is expected to begin in Houston at some point next year. I'm Windsor Johnston, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Sleep Number, offering three mattress collections with personalized features and the goal of providing people more choices based on their needs. Learn more at sleepnumber.com or a Sleep Number store.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. We'll get to Dan Hoost here in just a moment, but first, we want to thank a few folks who donated this morning to our summer fun drive. Thanks to Frederick from Brooklyn, Richard from Kerhonkson, and Matthew from Livingston Manor, all of them donating online and helping us out with our summer fun drive as we work toward our $65,000 goal. We're at 32% of that goal right now, and we can get a little further with your help. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org, or you can donate via the mobile app. It's 34%, actually. I just checked again. We've got $22,500 toward the $65,000 goal. Help us out. If you believe that independent local media matters, now is the perfect time to invest in our future with your gift, and you will keep our community connection alive. Please support us today during our Radio Catskill Summer Fun Drive. 845-482-4141, wjffradio.org, or on the mobile app. Every Friday, we get to check in with Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government. Hello, Mr. Hoost.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Happy Friday. I'm good. Mm-hmm. We are in a good spot in our summer fun drive, so I'm feeling good. We're going into the weekend with some momentum and got a lot of activities lined up as well.
Wonderful.
But first, we want to check in with you and find out what's been going on with the legislature. They met last week. They didn't meet last week. They met yesterday.
Yesterday.
And so there's a lot on the agenda. Let's start out with the child care assistance program. Those funds are being doubled. How's that happening? Yeah. What's going on?
Thanks to advocacy by the county and our state representatives, we are pleased to say that our original allocation of just over $3 million is being doubled to just about $6 million. However, that's not going to be available until October 1st. So we are not reopening the child care assistance program until that happens. I know there are folks out there who wish it, as we do actually, that we could do it sooner rather than later. But we have to wait until those funds are available, because right now we have overspent our funding that we have to date by $2 million. So we need to make sure that we get back in line with what we need to be spending, so we aren't having to pay the state back. And the $6 million will be extremely valuable and useful to so many folks who provide childcare in Sullivan County. It is a growing business. We want it to continue to be growing because people need childcare, especially if they are working one, two, sometimes even three jobs.
And to remind folks, that program was closed because of a lack of funding, and now the state is coming back to refund it, to add more to it, actually, just in time for school season as well. I mean, a little after school starts, but still, it's good news that it's coming back.
Yes, it is. I mean, the governor a couple years ago, I think, had expanded eligibility, I think the state legislature too, for the child care assistance program. We loved that, but the funding didn't expand with it. So suddenly we had a lot more applications and ran out of money a lot faster.
There were now just more people here than before.
Yeah, and more child care providers than before, which is great. We want to encourage that. I remember a few years back where we had only a couple child care providers throughout all of Sullivan County, and it wasn't a matter of funding. It was a matter of, you were on a wait list trying to get your kid in there, and by the time you got off it, your kid might be beyond when you needed the child care. So this is all good news, and we are looking forward to reopening applications in October.
The DMV, just in general, not specific to any county, but the DMV always gets a bad rap. But I think that County Clerk Russell Reeves is doing his best here in Sullivan County to help folks with DMV procedures and how to get the most out of it. He's advising folks on certain times to come because of how busy it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's why we've also gone to an appointment system. We started that during COVID. And now we've kept that in place because it's worked so well, because people can come and know that they're going to be seen, usually when they're about 15 minutes of whatever their appointment time is. And then they're in and they're out, whereas some people used to wait 3-4 hours. This is about people who are doing walk-ins. If you have an appointment, you have an appointment. We're going to honor that. But if you're going to walk in, we try to accommodate that one in where we can. But so many people are walking in on Mondays and Fridays during the summer that we cannot quickly accommodate everybody. And if you're a walk-in, you're going to wait for the appointment people to go first. So you could be waiting for a while. So if you want to walk in, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays is what our County Clerk Russell Reeves recommends.
And also that they're extending the hours for passport applications.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Thursdays. Actually, they already started it. I thought it was coming next week, but it's already started yesterday. They were there till 6:30 is the last appointment that they will take. You have to make an appointment. It is on the website right where DMV is as well. You can make an appointment for passports. We'll process them and get you in and out as fast as we possibly can.
I don't really want to think about winter too much at this point, even though we just went through a heat wave and could have used a little cooling. But we're looking ahead to the Department of Public Works warning that they might be short of some snowplow drivers this
Not
season.
Will be, unfortunately.
Will be. Yes. What's happened?
Yeah, unless something really changes, but this is a gap that we've never faced before. And we don't think our Commissioner of Public Works, Ed McAndrew, does not think we're going to overcome in time for the winter season unless there's a whole bunch of people with commercial driver's license and CDLs out there who are waiting in the wings to be called into action. We have a number of retirements and folks moving on to other jobs that are all coming from the ranks of our snowplow drivers. So what this has left us in a situation with is that we are probably going to be short at least 10 and as much as 15 snowplow drivers come the winter, which means that we will have to lengthen our routes. Like right now we have 2-hour circuits. They're probably going to have to be lengthened to 4-hour circuits because of the lack of manpower, which means, of course, you know how fast sometimes snow can pile up. Just in an hour or two, the roads may get even deeper, and that's what Commissioner McAndrew was saying to the legislature yesterday. There's nothing really other than that we can do about it at this point, because salaries are already set. Those are union negotiated. We can't just up those, except ask the state for help. The State Department of Transportation has indicated they may be able to take over some of the routes for us and provide some additional service, but we're not thinking that's going to cover everything. So it's going to be an issue that probably will just require people's patience and making sure that you have those snow tires or that all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive, because it's some of the county roads may end up having snow on them longer than we would wish.
Not just to be replowed, but to be plowed in the first place.
Yes.
Yeah. It'll take a little longer to get to folks then.
Yeah. Normally, Commissioner McAndrew said, in his experience, and he goes back 20-some years with the county, we've never had less than our 40-man strong complement of snowplow drivers. And now we're looking at maybe having 25, 30. So,
are those positions still open then?
Sure.
Or you would be hiring for them if there were qualified people to come to fill them?
Yep. At this point, I think we've found maybe one. It's just not something that people are signing up for, or they can make more money maybe in the private sector doing it elsewhere. We're competitive with other municipalities, but it is something that we are going to have to take a deeper look at, to see what we can do in the years ahead, because we don't want this to be an ongoing situation.
You know, I live on a road here that it doesn't have a lot of houses on it.
rural area, right? And I've always been admired and thankful for the plows coming through on a timely basis and thinking, wow, that's great. I'm so happy that that's happening here. But it sounds like there may be a longer wait for some of those plows to come through for folks.
Unless you get your CDL and you apply to it. So.
I don't know if you want to see me driving a snowplow.
Oh, I think you'd be good.
Yeah. But when you say the state, asking the state, and how likely is that? And then would they just be taking over major routes? Or
the state has indicated that they are willing and probably will be able to help with their existing workforce. But we don't think that's going to cover all the need. And of course, the state has to prioritize their state roads first. So, but we also have over the years, it's been sort of like a ping pong back and forth. Sometimes the state is plowing some county roads. Sometimes the county is plowing some state roads. Like I think in the past few years, the county has been plowing a good portion of State Route 97, State Route 55. The state may take some of that back over. So we'll see how it all shakes out. We've got to figure out exactly what the staffing is going to be. I would guess sometime around September, October, where we will probably have some sort of intermunicipal agreement with the state to say, listen, we need your help on this, and we'll handle that. I'll have more to explain about that when we get there, but no roads are going to go unplowed at all. Mm-hmm. The roads will be plowed, but it may take significantly longer for them to see a plow truck coming through.
Do you prioritize bus routes and school routes when you're plowing? Is that part of the calculation of where things are plowed first or the way they plan it out?
No, the prioritization is to hit all the routes at the same time and be out there. The prioritization comes into play when we have weather reports like the snow's falling heavier here than there. But there are certain things like, for example, SUNY Sullivan. We plow that. We're probably going to be asking the town of Fallsburg to help us out with keeping that plowed because people park there. And if they come out and find their car is stuck, I mean, you have to get out of your own parking spot. We can't just shovel around your car. That's not going to happen. But if the parking lot is as full as of snow as their parking spot is, you're going to have people stranded there. So those kinds of things will get priority.
We're talking to Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, about Sullivan County Legislature. Another topic came up yesterday at the legislature was veterans. A couple of things here. Veterans Service Agency Director Steve Walsh is saying that they're helping some families and vets avoid homelessness, which is good to hear.
Yeah, this was really, really heartwarming to hear that our Veteran Service Agency Director, Steve Walsh, he said that we have helped just in the past 2 months, 4 veterans and their families avoid being homeless, including somebody who had moved from Ulster to Sullivan and suddenly I think the housing situation just fell apart for them. And we were able to find a spot for them and relocate them. He also mentioned that our Veteran Service Agency, it serves close to 4,500 veterans here in Sullivan County and helps them get nearly $200,000 in monthly benefits. Aggregate, not each. Just so we're clear. Yeah. Suffolk County on Long Island, which is the easternmost county in New York State, serves 48,000 veterans, a much, much larger county. But actually, their veterans only get an aggregate of $200,000 in monthly benefits. Mm. So in other words, we're knocking it out of the park. Mm. With our small team, we are extremely dedicated to helping veterans throughout Sullivan County. This is not the Veterans Administration. It is not the VA. This is county-funded, county-run. And they work with the VA, of course, very closely. If you ask most veterans who've used them, they're their chief advocate, and they're there to help, whether you're homeless, whether you have a home, whether it's you're the veteran, whether you're the spouse or child of a veteran. It is amazing the services that they offer with a very, very small team. It's 5 people. And, of course, we have help from the local veterans nonprofits, the veterans clubs and things. But this team of people, they're the core effort in making sure that our veterans are safe and cared for in a way I think we all would want.
And would seem like maybe a small distinction here or change for vets who are local property owners in the area, whether they're full-time residents or not. They're now going to be eligible to be buried in the Sullivan County Veterans Cemetery. Talk a little bit about that change.
We were introduced to a gentleman from, I think, the Jeffersonville area yesterday, who has lived in Sullivan County since 1956, 70 years, but also has a residency elsewhere. I think it might be Florida or something. And if he's not considered an actual resident of Sullivan County under our current rules, not eligible to be buried in Sullivan County Veterans Cemetery, which is over near our social services campus in Liberty. But now, if you own property locally, whether you're a full-time resident or not, the legislature is moving towards, and they should approve it officially in about 2 weeks, you'll be eligible to be buried, if you wish, in the Sullivan County Veterans Cemetery.
And also some other business at the legislature yesterday, reporting some interesting statistics when it comes to the primary, the number of voters, and also a call for elections inspectors for the midterms coming up in November.
Yes, the Board of Elections Commissioners, Deanna Senek and Pam Byrne, provided a report to the legislature. I always find this report fascinating because it shows not just numbers, but all the work that they're doing all the time. But the statistics from the 2026 primary election were interesting to me. I did not have a chance to compare with prior years, but this sounded pretty good to me, that there were 2,544 voters who cast their vote in person on primary day, 908 Democrats and 1,636 Republicans. It was only open to Democrats and Republicans. Now, the larger number with the Republicans is because there were more races for them to choose from, where the Democrats there weren't. But there were still 908 Democrats, and that was just on primary day. We had 231 Democrats and 240 Republicans vote over the 9-day early voting period at both the government center and public health. We had 717 requests for early mail ballots, 74 for Democrats and 643 for Republicans, and 703 requests for absentee ballots, 432 for Democrats and 271 for Republicans. So it's very interesting information, especially for those who are considering running for office. But it also shows how hard our Board of Elections has been working to make sure that people have access and are welcome to vote how they need to vote.
And a reminder again, the election, general election 2026 is November 3rd. There are many races on the ballot, but important to note that in New York, at most county levels, including Sullivan County, a lot of the positions that were on the ballot in November last year will be on the ballot again this year.
Yes.
That's town supervisors and all these local positions that really influence what your life is like in your area, because of a change at the state level with the even odd voting years. Those usually had been on an odd year. Now they're being shifted to
they're all even years.
So if you voted for your town supervisor in whatever county you live in and you're listening to us now, and you're probably going to have to vote for whoever again, or whoever chooses to run again at those in those offices. So again, important to register to vote, important to keep an eye on those election dates and times.
And important, if you believe in the democratic process and in voting, to encourage people around you, or maybe even consider yourself being an elections inspector.
And tell people some of the benefits of that.
Well, we pay you $300 a day for that. We also pay for your training, which I think is usually a $40 to $50 cost. And we then work with you to figure out what days and times, because we have early voting, not just on election day itself, but on election day, of course, is when we have the biggest need, because we have, I think it's about 50, 60 poll sites open across the county between 6 a.m. and 9 p.m. We need people to be staffing those poll sites. We can't have them unstaffed. We have to have folks there. And it's not to just maintain security over the ballots, but also to answer voters' questions, which you're trained to answer, to also make sure that they've signed in correctly and that they're sent to the correct ballot machine with the ballot that they need to have. It's an important part of democracy. It's handling sometimes if there's concerns or questions or complaints. Our Board of Elections desperately needs more election inspectors. We can take them as young as 17. And I think that's a wonderful way to introduce young people, frankly, to the voting process. You can also work with the Board of Elections, like I said, on days and times. A lot of people look at the 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. like, I'm going to be spending my whole day waking up early and going to bed late. You don't necessarily have to. I know in the past they've worked out portions of days, but there's also early voting. This is crucial to having a vote that is fair and safe and democratic. We need lots of people, and the Board of Elections would love to hear from you or somebody else who's interested. 807-0400. That's 807-0400. Call them up. They'll give you all the information you need to know, make sure that everything is where it needs to be, and then they'll train you, and you'll figure out when and where you're going to be doing this important work.
Update on the Move Sullivan route in Monticello. That route is changing stops and times.
Right. As of July 20th, well, the current route will continue through July 17th. That's a Friday. And then July 20th, that following Monday, it will change. The loops actually will increase. And we're going instead of every, I think we did the loop in an hour. I think we're doing now the loop in like 45 minutes. It's going to actually be better for the public. It's based upon public feedback. So that starts July 20th. The full schedule is available at movesullivan.com.
All right. And before we go, a few other reminders. There is a free rabies clinic tomorrow in Liberty.
Yep, in Hanafy Park, our public health department is putting it on. You just need to be a Sullivan County resident, which means you're going to have ID or something proving you're a county resident. Pets must be 3 months or older, on a leash, in a carrier, muzzled, one or the other. If you have previous vaccination proof, bring it. It's dogs, cats, and ferrets between 2 and 3:30 p.m. tomorrow at Hanafy Park. If you can't make it, we're going to be coming back to Hanafy on August 13th, 6 to 7:30. And then on October 7th, we'll be at the Monticello Firehouse from 6 to 7:30.
And the Child Advocacy Center is looking for books all next week for the clients.
Yeah, this is wonderful that they're doing this. This is a group that works very much in obscurity by intent and design, because we're dealing with children who have been victims of abuse and trauma. But they do this at our public health building, and they're looking to help maybe mitigate a little bit of this trauma by having children's books available for the kids that they serve. So they're looking for new or used children's books that are still in good condition, and they are taking them anytime between 8:30 and 4 p.m. next week, July 13th through the 17th. That's at the Public Health Building, which is 50 Community Lane in Liberty. They will happily take any of those kids' books off your hands. And who doesn't probably, if you have had kids, have some books for children that you no longer need?
A reminder also that the health and state, is it really called an extravaganza?
It is. It is.
The health and safety extravaganza by Public Health is coming up July 24th. I see. Okay. Yeah. It is. Why is it an extravaganza,
Dave? Oh, because they always do things big at the Department of Public Health. It's going to be from 12 to 3 p.m. At the Public Health Building, which again is 50 Community Lane in Liberty. From 2 to 3 p.m., though, it's going to be sensory friendly. So if you have children or people in your family who are sensitive to noises and lights and things, from 2 to 3 p.m., it will be a little bit toned down. It'll still be an extravaganza. It'll be fun. But we're going to have a vaccination clinic for back to school. We're going to have child passenger safety, a vision screening, special needs, emergency preparedness, summer and animal safety education, touch a truck, a drone demonstration.
Ooh, drones.
There'll be games and prizes. A lot of fun going on. We're doing this with the state, and it's funded by the governor's traffic safety committee. So it's pretty cool what we're having. And again, that's Friday, July 24th from 12 to 3 p.m., sensory friendly 2 to 3.
And also want to remind folks that Fort Delaware is closed next weekend, still this weekend, but they're preparing for a big event.
Yes. Well, actually, they'll be at a big event next week in July 17th through the 19th. We will be having an encampment at our Menacing Battleground Park near Berryville. And the staff for Fort Delaware Museum of Colonial History will be part of the team that has helped putting that on, because they all work for the Delaware Company, which is putting this together. It is going to be really cool. We're going to have folks there who are doing everything from musket demonstrations to camping. We're going to have a commemoration on Saturday the 18th at 4 o'clock, as we do every year. But there's going to be things going on the whole day. And then right after it ends on Sunday, the 19th, we'll all be heading over to Eldred, where the town of Highland is having their 250th anniversary of America celebration. So it's going to be really cool.
Celebrating all over.
Dan, oh, yes.
Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you next week. Have a great weekend.
You too.
We'll take a break, and we'll learn more about what's happening at the latest proposed data center in Northeast Pennsylvania, where public health concerns, diesel generators, and local opposition are taking center stage. We'll talk to WVIA's Kat Bolus after this. It's Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Catskill Art Space in Livingston Manor, offering exhibitions, performances, screenings, and more, with long-term installations from James Turrell and Saul LeWitt. Open year-round. CatskillArtSpace.org.
Hey, it's Michael Loewinger from On the Media. At OTM, we pride ourselves on cutting through the BS to bring you frank analysis about the news and the news industry. So let me do that right now. Public radio is at risk, but it's not just NPR and your local station. The American press writ large is in serious trouble. The people who cut our funding are afraid of fearless journalism. They're afraid of good information that they cannot control. They're afraid of rigorous reporting into their daily distortions and conflicts of interest. We, as public radio journalists, promise to be a bulwark for reality. But we need your help to do our best work and to stay on air. Please support this station by starting a monthly donation now. This is not a time to sit back. Thank you.
Give now at wjffradio.org or on the Radio Catskill mobile app.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and it's our summer fun drive asking for your donations so we can continue to bring you local news and information that's meaningful, relevant to you and to your friends and neighbors. Donate at 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org or, as you heard, on the mobile app. One of the stories that's happening in our area that a lot of folks are paying attention to is the debate over proposed data centers. A proposed campus in Archibald, Pennsylvania, continues to intensify as the debate over that continues to intensify as new testimony raises questions about potential public health impacts. During the latest zoning hearing, a public health expert testified that emissions from the project's backup diesel generators could pose health risks for nearby residents, while the developer challenged those conclusions. Joining us with the latest on the Wildcat Ridge data center proposal there in Northeast Pennsylvania and what comes next is Kat Bolus of WVIA. Kat, thanks for being here. Kat, are you there? Oh, there you are. Kat, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. We know you've been following the Wildcat Ridge proposal there in Archibald. Bring us up to date. What happened at this latest zoning hearing?
Yes. Yeah, so the objectors finally had the chance to bring forth an expert, and they did so with Dr. Quirk. He is a postdoctorate at Harvard, and he studies public health and, you know, how that relates to air pollution. So he kind of prepared a study looking at, you know, how the 580 diesel generators that are proposed for this campus could impact, you know, health outcomes, health quality, you know, in Archibald, kind of specifically in Lackawanna County. So he came up with a number. So he said that could cause between $3 million and $124 million in health damages annually, just from the short time that the backup diesel generators could run.
Wow. And how many of those diesel generators did you say were potentially proposed for this development?
588.
Wow, that is...
And they would all be about the size of a school bus.
Wow. And so he's testifying that there would be this cost to health damages and those numbers. And another point that stood out was the distinction between regulatory standards and public health impacts. Can you explain that difference for listeners?
Yeah, so when it was the developer's chance to kind of cross-examine Dr. Quirk, you know, the attorney, Megan Haynes, she had asked, well, this isn't going to stop us from getting a DEP air permit. And, you know, to that answer, Cork said, well, I don't study whether or not you can get a permit. I just study, you know, the health impacts. And he said, you know, anytime you have, you know, diesel exhaust, he called it a well-established public health concern, there's going to be some type of pollution that goes into the air. So, you know, the DEP or the EPA standards, you know, are set at a level that's kind of satisfactory, but there's still, regardless, there's still going to be some type of pollution. So she was kind of, you know, asking him pointed questions about whether or not he believes they can get a DEP, you know, Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection air permit. And he was just like, that's not what I'm studying.
Right, right. The developer also argued that all of those over 500 backup generators wouldn't operate at the same time, except perhaps during an emergency. How central is that disagreement to this whole debate?
So they do have to be tested. Backup generators have to be tested. So I believe that they have to be tested for 16 hours a year. And they keep saying, you know, when we get to land development, when we get kind of further in our proposal, we'll have a testing schedule, we'll come up with a testing plan. But a lot of people in the audience pointed out that, you know, we just had a heat wave last week and the, you know, PJM, which is the grid that Pennsylvania, and I believe New York is also on too, had any kind of company that could go on backup generators, to kind of provide more electricity for, you know, for homes, for their air conditioning. So like at the station, we had to go on our backup generator. So a lot of people made a point that, okay, well, here's a heat wave, you know, in the beginning of July, all 588 of those backup generators would have been on, you know, if the building was up and running.
Did we learn anything new about what type of generators or emissions controls the developer ultimately plans to use at Wildcat Ridge?
No. So that was one of the other, you know, kind of the developer kind of pointed out. And, you know, Cork kind of responded, well, I used the information that was available. And, you know, again, they keep saying, well, we're just looking for zoning approval yet. When we kind of get to that land development, to the, kind of those final processes, that's when you'll know what kind of generator we're using. You'll know what kind of emissions controls are on them. The number has already changed. It wasn't always 588. It was always over 500, but it wasn't always 588. So there's just a lot of unknowns. And I think that really concerns the people of Archbold and, quite frankly, Lackawanna County.
You've been covering the data centers in Northeast Pennsylvania, not just there in Lackawanna County, but all over the area. And one recurring issue has been looking at these projects individually versus collectively. Why are residents...
Yes.
Why are residents pushing for a cumulative review of the proposed data centers there in Archbold?
So I think Archbold is a very good example of that because you have six data center campuses proposed in the borough. So the borough is, I just did this figure, but it's slightly smaller than Manhattan. So you'd have 51 data center buildings or 50 data center buildings. Each need one or maybe more you know, backup diesel generators, or, you know, they could use liquid natural gas, but, you know, that's a whole nother issue. So if the power grid, you know, if there's a heat wave and PJM says all data centers need to go on, you know, your backup diesel generators, if all six of those facilities were built, that would be thousands of generators running in Archbold. So that's why, you know, the residents of Archbold and, you know, when Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro kind of made a surprise visit to speak to them, they said, we need these to be looked at as a whole, not just one by one, because this six of them changes our quality of life. One of them changes our quality of life, but six of them, you know, completely changes the footprint of Archbold.
Yeah. And where does the zoning process go from here?
So they're still in the conditional use process. There is another meeting on Monday. It's at the Valley View High School in Archbold. And the borough is presenting a noise expert. So that noise expert will present, you know, what they found out. The developers will, again, have an opportunity to cross-examine them. And then what they're what the public is hoping for is that they'll be able to give their public comment into their record about whether or not, you know, the Wildcat Ridge developers should receive the zoning approval. So that process will start Monday. I'm not sure if it'll show up on Monday.
You dropped a minute there. You're not sure if it's going to finish on Monday. Is that what you
finish
said?
Finish up.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then we also understand that there might be a noise expert at the next hearing. Is that something that folks are looking to, you know, get some questions answered there?
That's been another big issue, especially with these data center proposals, you know, being so close to homes. People want to know what they're going to sound like, how they're going to, you know, how that's going to impact their quality of life, you know, if they're going to be able to sleep at night.
Yeah.
So the board, the Archibald Borough, you know, board is presenting a noise study on Monday. And that's kind of counter to the developers already done a noise study, but this is going to be a second one.
So this is from the residents bringing this up. And what should from the borough? Sorry.
Yeah.
And what should residents be watching for over the next several weeks as this proposal continues to move through the review process?
I think what's very interesting is that when you talk about zoning and you talk about zoning specifically in Pennsylvania, a lot of it relies on case law. So, you know, what happens in Archibald could set a precedent going forward in Pennsylvania, you know, for how small municipalities like Archibald deal with zoning issues. You know, if they deny this for, you know, X, Y, and Z reasons, you know, another municipality that's facing a similar issue could say, okay, well, there's case law, you know, or there's an example here over in Archibald. They, you know, this didn't fit into their quality of life, you know, or their, you know, their zoning ordinance that aims to protect the health and safety of the people in Archibald. So I think that's what's interesting is I think that this, what's happening in Archibald, a lot of people are watching it because they want to see how it can reflect back in their own communities.
Well, yeah, and with all of these data center proposals popping up all over the area, we know of that one in Clinton Township over in Wayne County as well. So they might be looking to what's going on in Archibald next door to see how it might influence the process of their neighborhood as well.
Yeah, and I just wanted to point this out. A lot of the residents in Wayne County have been showing up for the Archibald residents at the zoning hearing meetings. They kind of have a small contingency of people who come out and show support for the Stop Archibald Data Centers group. And, you know, they're also taking notes and they're learning, too, about the process that Archibald is in right now.
That's Kat Bolas, a reporter with WVIA. You can read her reporting about data centers and more at WVIA.org. Kat, thank you so much. I'm sure we'll be talking to you soon.
Yep. Thanks, Tim. Have a good day.
Still to come, we'll learn how one evening of jazz, cocktails, and elevated bites will help support the arts and food security in our region. This is Radio Chatskill.
My name is Jasmine Garst, and I'm an immigration correspondent for NPR. Covering immigration right now is extremely challenging. A lot of the people I'm interviewing are hiding because they're too afraid to go outdoors. Something that I have really tried to focus on in my work is the humanity and the nuance and complexity of every human being, whether that is a 12-year-old girl trying to live her life in Minneapolis or a farmer in Florida. I think that we're at an inflection point in which we're really questioning our identity as a country, what we're okay with and what we're not. And that's something that I think is going to be a really big story this year. Your donation supports journalism that gets to the heart of the story. Please give today, and thank you.
Donate now at WJFFradio.org.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Will-O-Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange, Sullivan, and Rockland, a publicly supported philanthropic institution. Information at CFOSRNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Listeners like you who donate during our summer fun drive right now, 845-482-4141, WJFFradio.org, as you heard, or also now on the Radio Catskill mobile app. You're listening to Radio Catskill, and two Sullivan County nonprofits joining forces for a unique fundraiser built around a simple idea that great music and great food both bring people together. On August 6th, A Single Bite and the Chandelier Music Festival are presenting The Perfect Pairing, Jazz, Cocktails, and Elevated Bites, an evening featuring Leslie Pintchek. I hope I said that right, the Leslie Pintchek Trio. We'll find out in a minute. While raising money to support both organizations. Joining us right now are people who know the names of the people I'm trying to pronounce, Sims Foster and Dan Stroop, to talk about this collaboration. And it looks like we lost Dan, but we'll get him right back. And Sims is right there. Hi, Sims. How are you?
Tim, good morning.
We're having a little difficulty here getting Dan on the phone, but we'll get him back in just a second.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit more about this partnership. How did A Single Bite and Chandelier Music Festival come together for this event?
Well, I've been a fan of the Chandelier Music Festival for a very long time. I think we're in its 33rd season up there in Chandelier. And as a former musician myself, I've always enjoyed sneaking away to these beautiful summer August evenings and the concerts up there. And Dan, as the founder, recently, a couple of years ago, asked me to join the board, and I was honored and privileged to do so. So as we began to brainstorm about Chandelier Music Festival, which is a not-for-profit, and of course A Single Bite, which is Kirsten and I are founders of that not-for-profit.
Kirsten Foster, Foster yes, Supply.
Yes, big JFF fan, of course.
And supporters, thank you.
Yeah, and always. And so we kind of came up with this idea of how do we join forces? Because as we know in Sullivan County, we're always looking for creative ways to continue to build up new awareness about organizations. So we may have had people that are passionate about A Single Bite, and Dan certainly had people that were passionate about Chandelier Music Festival. And how do we combine and kind of co-mix and co-mingle and be good partners? So last year we did an amazing sit-down dinner and before one of the performances, and it was wonderful and very involved. And this year we decided to go a little lighter, and we're having this big cocktail party with this amazing jazz group. So a little more social, a little more circulation, a little more music and food and conversation. And we're trying that format this year.
The theme is music is food for the soul. What does that phrase mean to you, and how did it inspire the collaboration?
Well, I mean, certainly music is food for my soul, as I know it is for yours. what is it about? That's a whole different topic about what it is. But I guess, you know, food is nourishing. And of course, Single Bite is here to help our neighbors who are most in need tonight, and also have an education program. We're in every school in Sullivan County. We get to every seventh grader with our education, our real education program. And we're now feeding 1,300 or 1,400 people a week out of our real food program, which is our meals. So that, you know, that's what the food part is. And of course, the music is about something else. It nourishes different parts of our humanity.
And I think we've got Dan Stroop back from the Chandelier Music Festival on the line. Dan, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
We were just talking about the theme, music is food for the soul, and was asking what that phrase means to you.
Oh, my goodness. Food for the soul. I've been involved in music since I was 6 years old, and I grew up with music, and I've performed as a part of a piano duo, and music is just my life. And it's, you know, what I've lived for all these years.
And talk a little bit about your mission and how, you know, bringing world-class music to the Catskills is a common value connecting with A Single Bite's mission of addressing food insecurity.
Yes, well, I can read our mission statement. Chandeli Music Festival encourages and promotes the careers of exceptional musicians through an annual series of solo and chamber music performances. The festival is dedicated to bringing world-renowned artists to the Sullivan County community. Our Sunset Concert Pavilion sits atop the mountains of Chandeli in an intimate setting with exceptional acoustics. One of the highest priorities of the festival is to partner with local arts and educational institutions and to engage people of all ages in the live concert experience. So we are closely aligned with Sims and Foster.
And that has been there as a since the beginning, not something you added in. It's part of your core values. Let's talk a little bit about the evening. Talk about the music and who's playing and why they were the right choice for this event.
Yes, it's the Leslie Pinchuk Jazz Trio. And Leslie has been a close friend of mine for many, many years. And when she found out what was happening that night, she was pleased to perform. Just a quote, Pinchuk's music is fresh, full of light, and instantly invigorating. So as we have this event with the jazz going on in the pavilion, it's just going to add to the, you know, to the beauty of the evening. And the pavilion is going to be open reception style. It's not going to be performance seating style. So everybody can roam around while the music's being played and while the hors d'oeuvres are being served.
How will the proceeds from the event benefit each organization? Sims, you want to talk about the impact it would have on A Single Bite?
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge benefit for us. And Dan and I last year said, you know, listen, we're going to cover obviously the costs of the performers, and then whatever's left is going 50-50. So you really are supporting two. It's two for the price of one. You get to support food insecurity solutions real food education here in Sullivan County, and also this amazing music, long-standing, really institution here in Sullivan County that Dan started 33 years ago. So we're splitting the proceeds. That's what we did last year. And we, you know, it was nice to see people last year who didn't know about A Single Bite, and we got to introduce them to the cause. Yeah. And other people on the other side as well who we're constantly trying to cross-pollinate here because we have, as you well know, we have, and you're in the middle of it, a community of people who really do give and care and really are looking always to figure out how they invest in different parts of our community.
What have you learned about the generosity of folks in the area when it comes to supporting both your organizations?
Well, I mean, I'm constantly humbled and sometimes overwhelmed with the generosity of volunteerism and spirit and financial donations that we see at A Single Bite. We're not a rich county, and we, you know that, and we are a rural county and we have our struggles. And I think in some ways that makes the people here understand that if they don't give, who else? If not me, who? And I think that's what I see over and over again from the spirit of people with, you know, that give at all levels. That's what I would say.
Dan, do you see that same spirit of generosity too?
Yes, absolutely. And like Sims was saying, some of his people that know his organization get to know ours when we do this collaboration, and vice versa. People that come to our concerts may not know about A Single Bite and the important mission that Sims is, you know, giving to the community. So it benefits both of us greatly.
Yeah. Let's remind folks where they can get more information, tickets, and more information about the details of the event, like parking, things like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, they can get tickets at two different places, which is two organizations, at asinglebite.org. That's asinglebite.org. You can get tickets, and you can also get tickets, right, Dan, at the Chandeli Music Festival.
Yes.
Which is?
Two ways to get tickets. They can go online to our website, which is chandeli.org. spelled S-H-A-N-D-E-L-E-E.org, or they can call our box office. Our box office number is 845-439-3277.
And, you know, looking ahead, what gives you guys the most hope about bringing people together through this shared mission of music and food to help other people, especially in a time when community connections matter more than ever? Dan?
Sims, you want to...
Or Sims?
Chime in.
Yeah, I mean...
I'm always hitting you with a hard-hitting journalist question.
You know, you're getting too good, Tim Bruno. I remember when you were just a softy. I think when we do this right, which we will, you know, here's an evening where you create an environment for people. Yes, we're enjoying great food and we're enjoying great music, of course, and really stimulate conversation. And I always like it when we see people who are new to each other and new to an organization create that energy that says, "Wow, I found something here. This helps me believe in the area and my choice to be here and my choice to give." And that's always infectious, and that's always what I'm hoping an event like this will create.
Anything to add, Dan?
No, I think Sim said it all. It's just a wonderful collaboration, and we're fortunate, you know, to have Sims in our community, and we'll share good food and good music.
That's Dan Stroop of Chandelier Music Festival and Sims Foster of A Single Bite, both organizations presenting the perfect pairing: jazz cocktails and elevated bites. An evening to benefit both organizations to help also battle food insecurity in the area. And again, music really is food for the soul. It's August 6th. There's more information at chandelier.org or asinglebite.org. Sims, Dan, thank you so much.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you so much.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill, but it's not going to do it for our summer fun drive. We're not done just yet, but if you enjoy hearing community conversations like you've heard this hour, if you enjoy getting local news and information that you don't get anywhere else, support us with your donation right now at 845-482-4141, or you can go to the WJFF website, wjffradio.org, or try the mobile app. It's new for Android and iPhone. You can download it. It's free. And donate right there. Plus, take us wherever you go. We'll see you tomorrow, actually, when we've got live music here in the studio all day long from 10 to 4. And then on Sunday at the Blue Fox Motel for our Summer Fun Drive pool party. There's plenty of places where you can support us. And we're happy to do it and be here for you. We're Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support comes from Sullivan 180. Building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at Sullivan180.org and from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Thank you for listening to Radio Catskill. And thank you for being a fan of public radio. We know not everyone is. But despite a handful of detractors and defunders out there, Radio Catskill is reaching more communities than ever before. We're constantly connecting new neighbors to our quality programming, fact-based journalism, and life-saving information. And we're able to keep doing more and more of this good work because of our fans, our friends, our dedicated listeners and supporters who donate at wjffradio.org. Their gift is a statement about the kind of community they want to live in: informed, engaged, and connected. They send a message that trustworthy local news matters, that community connection matters, and that public radio in communities like ours across the country deserves a strong future. Please, be a part of that future today. Give now at wjffradio.org. Thank you.
You can also donate via the mobile app or call 845-482-4141. To everybody who's donated so far, thank you so much if you've made that gift to our summer fun drive. Your generosity is inspiring others to join you. And if you've been waiting for the right moment, this is it. Together, we're all ensuring that trusted local news and outstanding music and community programming remain available for everyone across the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. So donate now. Call us at 845-482-4141, wjffradio.org, or on the Radio Catskill mobile app. Join our community of supporters right now. Today's forecast, not as warm, still a little humid with some sun and clouds mixed. We could see a thunderstorm this afternoon. And if they're intense, maybe some temporary flooding on poor drainage areas. High 80, cloudy tonight, low of 61. Tomorrow and for the weekend, it looks to be around 80, 81 degrees, a possible thunderstorm in the afternoon. Tomorrow, sunny, partly sunny, actually, on Sunday. So a nice weekend for us as we have our live music in studio all day tomorrow. And then our pool party at Blue Fox Motel on Sunday. On Point is next.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR.